Thank you very much.
There's a mic up there.
Yeah, Rita.
Thank you very much. After this introduction, I even want to hear what I have to say. So the truth in that, first of all, let me tell you that Rabbi Targum is my boss, and I always wanted to follow him. And now, literally and figuratively, I got to follow him. So he didn't get to hear that, but that's the way I feel. I'd love to follow him. Secondly, I didn't know I was speaking until a little while ago. I don't mean minutes ago, but like 2 or 3 days ago. And so I had this really catchy idea of how I was going to give a spiffy title, which I think they put up. And I was going to do a real cheapo and say, like my friend of mine says, what are the 3 rules of parenting? Example, example, example. But if you come from England, example, example, example. And I was going to try and do that here. And then driving here, I had this whole new idea for 3 ideas, which got me lost 3 times to commit for each one of the 3 rules. And it would really be a good idea if I could tell you how everything works out, but I made 3 rules on the way here, and everything I'm going to tell you fits in, but I'm not going to prove it to you. Just either trust me or do it yourself. Now, I know it would really be spiffy to start off with a story, but what do I know about stories? So let me just say what my 3 rules are before I forget them, because I'm going to get so road warrior from how I thought of these 3 rules. And they are, firstly, consideration to teach, to, by example, is you want to fight what's called in Yiddish zich. You have to fight against yourself. And we all know that. The expression is, my desamilach, what's despicable to you, what you despise, don't do to others. That's the way we say it. The non-Jewish world says, do unto others. We say, don't do unto others. And that difference is significant. We need things with compression. Do unto others is very abstract. It's amorphous. But do you want someone to hurt you, to pain you, to afflict you? The answer is no. Don't do unto others. We want to say negatively. So to apply this for consideration, we'll just put it in the negative. Do you want to be deprived a lift when you're stuck on the road? Of course not. So then do it for others. That's rule number one. The second rule is fair. Just simply to be fair. And fairness is so critically important because if you had a sense, I don't mean you to be accusatory, if one had a sense of fairness, I interrupt to ask me, what time are we ending? And I know it has to be on time.
About 25 minutes.
Oh, listen quickly. Okay. The second rule is fair. If you are fair, you're not going to engage in Lashon Hara because it's innately unfair to speak about someone not in their... If you wouldn't speak in their presence, then you certainly wouldn't do it if you're fair in their absence. Fair means you can have an argument. You can even argue with your spouse if it's a fair argument. A fair argument means you keep on the point. But what do people do? And you always do this, and you dredge up everything. That's no longer a fair argument. Fair is another rule of consideration. And lastly, not to be lazy. If you are a lazy person, or you have lazy nature, as most everyone does, then you'll always default to the easiest course. Do you want to be in a room with garbage which is overflowing in the kitchen? Probably not. I'm sure not. But you're lazy to take it out. Do you want there to be a baby which needs to be changed? No. But if you overcome the laziness, then that's consideration for everyone. And we all know Chabakum Himidim Alachas. We always try and consolidate from something 4 to 3 to 2 to 6, 12 to 11 to down to 1. So the one is really just to be a mensch. That's consideration. What we were taught by our parents all the time, to act like a mensch. And if I may, I'm going to now give a presentation of a few rules of what I would call menschlichkeit. We all know this. And not even implying anyone's rusty, but recommendation, a little reminders are beneficial. Firstly, every talk I've ever attended on child rearing, and there aren't many of them, they always stress how important it is to love your children, which I personally think is rather duh. But no one stresses equally obvious that if children are well-behaved and courteous and polite and clean up after themselves, they're more lovable. And it's going to be easier to love them. In other words, if you don't teach children to be courteous and polite, to be mentioned, then that, I think, is a form of parental abuse. But I'm not here to teach about parenting, but ourselves in consideration. Okay, minimalistically good manners will mean If you have a soil tissue, not to leave it on the bench. I can't believe in yeshiva, there's tissues everywhere. On the bench or on the table, but to put it in your pocket. You come from England, in your pocket. You see, I'm in Israel, I teach internationals, so I have to... It means minimalistically to give your seat on a bus or a train or public transportation to one who's older or weaker. I'm sorry. I once gave my seat on a bus to a woman that I thought was pregnant. She told me she wasn't. I was so embarrassed. I said, I'm getting off anyways. So I had to pay double car fare. By giving a seat, I also mean this would also be applicable taxis. Again, I don't think this is exactly for Teaneck, but not so far over the bridge in Manhattan, where taxis are always at a premium, offering a cab to one who's older or weaker. And I'm in the latter category of weaker. I'm always schlepping my books. More about that soon in the title. I'm always schlepping my books, which means I'm not that ambulatory because I have these heavy books with me. So when you hail a cab, hey taxi, you got to think to it, hey taxi, when you hail a cab, it can't stop right there. It has to weave its way to the side of the road. I'm going to tell you a story, which is a true story. You know that every story has two versions, except for this one. So I hailed a cab, and it was mamish my cab. Hey taxi, I hailed a cab, and it weaved to the side of the road, and I hoisted up my box of books, and I was running to the taxi, and a girl gets in. I said, hey, that's my taxi. And she said, that's life. This is what I'm trying to encourage you not to do, just in case. And you have to wonder to me for society if it's not obvious. Connected. I don't know why this is. I don't know why this is, but it is. Driving brings out the worst character in people. And if someone cuts you on the highway, my students, I teach in a hotel, my students told me you'll cut 9 other people to cut them back. That's intelligent at 90 miles an hour. And, you know, you can be driving and someone cuts you, and all of a sudden all these expletives are unspooled in front of children. Now, the person who cut you may not be a righteous, pious saint, but they're not your enemy. And before I came here, I looked up the statistics of road rage, and I already forgot what I looked up. But I do remember that every year in America, over 100,000 people are maimed for life, consequential to road rage. You may lose a nanosecond or two, but it's not worth all that much. Okay. Now, in preparing this little talk, I have issues that are simple. We've done the simple ones. And I have some hard ones. And I'm not going to give you all the hard ones in a row because I'll lose you. But we're up to a hard one. And that is, now you look at me like an old fuddy-duddy, even though I'm just 27. But I was not born with a cell phone surgically attached to my ear. And if I could create a new term, it would be cell phone decorum. For there are times that it is inappropriate to speak on a cell phone. I've been at funerals where a cell phone goes off. Now, I'm aware of the fact that sometimes you forget to turn off your phone. But what I'll never get is how do people take the call? And by the way, did you ever notice that at a Leviathan, it's always the jumpiest niggin? It's always the Munsters or the Adams family thing. And so I was discussing at the Shabbos table that I was at a funeral and the phone went off. My kid said it was probably a doctor. I said, I don't think that 15-year-old girl is a doctor. And what I also don't get, and I mean I don't get it, is the phone goes off. This should be a message from the rooftops, turn off your phone. And nachering and nachering and nachering, everyone's phone's going off. Turn off your phone. I was at a funeral not long ago, actually it was almost a year ago, in Yerushalayim. A young woman from America was in the terrace. And there's a fellow next to me whose phone kept going off again and again and again. And it wasn't on silent, and he's talking about food. And finally, after maybe 5 calls, in consecutive calls, my eyeballs began to pierce him. And he moved over a little bit. He didn't turn off his phone. And I turned to the guy next to him and said, can you believe this? Said, Chanoi, I can't believe you can't believe it. That's the way it is. But I will never get adjusted to this. This is such a gross violation of their heritage. A student of mine in seminary asked to speak with me, and right after class, I made my business speak to her, and she started taking out her phone texting while we were talking. And I thought to myself, this would be akin to speaking to someone that you requested and pulling out a novel in the middle and start reading. while I'm venting on the phone, not on the phone, about the phone, people, Providence places you in a crowded place, a bus or a restaurant. People talk so loud. Why do I have to hear all the gory details of your new diet? Or how cute your niece is, or what you're making for supper? Or people say intimate things loudly into the phone. Okay. We're going to skip a little bit. Not that you would know. I'm sorry, Mrs. Schwartz. Give me an exact time.
10 to 12.
10 to 12, American time. Hold on to that. 16 minutes. Listen quickly. Skip, skip, skip. Okay. Skip more. Here, another hard one. Sorry, I was going to space it and buffer it, but here's a hard one. Everyone knows. Everyone knows that if I put my hand in your pocket, I'm a thief. And if I steal, I'm a thief. But there is much less awareness that if I cause you to wait for me, that is also stealing, but it's far more heinous. Because money can be replaced, time is replaceable. If you make a whole class wait for you, a whole office wait for you, that's a far more serious crime. The Chazon Ish, is that name familiar to you? So far to two of you, it's growing. One row is into the Chazon Ish. Chazon Ish was the undisputed gadol, the most prominent rabbi of the year 1950s-60s, so much so that even the Prime Minister of Israel, named after the airport, if he had a matter of importance, matters concerning Judaism, he too would go speak to the Chazon Ish. And he was once putting together Chazon Ish and Minyan, we call this Minyan Mitzumtzam, a bare-bones Minyan, just 10 men. And one of the men was hemming and hawing, said, what's the matter? He said, I'm happy to attend your Minyan, but I have an appointment now, and I'll be late to my appointment. Said the Chazon Ish, go to your appointment. And he added, you can't daven on stolen time. And that broke the Minyan. More contemporaneously, my Rebbe Zichron Racha, Shlomo Zalman Orbach, if someone would give him a ride, he'd be extraordinarily grateful. I don't have a bigger adjective than extraordinarily, but I mean outrageously, extraordinarily, on steroids, grateful for a ride, because it saved him time. And someone, the person who told me the story, he's no longer living. He was the first car in Shari Chesed, Shlomo Zalman's neighborhood. He offered Shlomo Zalman a ride to go to a wedding out of town. And he said, what time should I pick up the Rosh Yeshiva? He said, pick me up at 4:30, because the wedding is called for 6 o'clock. Now, let me explain how he not had a ride. It would have meant walking from his neighbor, Shari Chesed, to Mach Yehuda. That's a 20-minute walk for one in good health and good weather. Not always were both of these conditions fulfilled. And then waiting for a bus to go to Tel Aviv. And then in Tel Aviv, waiting for a bus to go to Petach Tikva. I'm sorry, then for getting a bus to, first a bus to the train, bus station, then a bus to Tel Aviv, then a bus from Tel Aviv to Petach Tikva, and then Petach Tikva, a fourth bus to the hall. That's four buses on and off, squishy women, and now telescopically condensed to 1.25 hours as opposed to 5.5 hours. He said, pick me up at 4:30. Now my own experience was from Azam and the Badal Chaim Togim, is Talmud Mubak with Avigdor Nebensal. Any time you offer to give them a ride, at that time you make up their outside with a safer waiting, never, ever, ever, you have to wait for them. 4:30 is waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting. 4:30, 4:40, 5 o'clock, 5:10, 5:25, the driver's moseying along, says, where were you? I couldn't bear the thought that if I would pick up the Rosh Yeshiva on time, we would arrive at the wedding as the busboys were setting up the table, as the photographer's taking his equipment out of the case. Said Shlomo Zalman, I don't care if you never give me a ride again, at a time that it was very hard to get a ride. But we make up a time, we must keep a time. The poor chassan, the poor groom, there's so much on his mind. He's worried about, is the Masada Kedushin coming? Is he coming on time? Don't worry about me. I have plenty of things to do with my time, but we make up a time, we must keep a time. So you'll say, I'm not a prompt person. As people always say to me, I'm not a Yeki, I'm not of Germanic ancestry. And nor am I. But I don't want people to wait for me, and I don't want to cause other people. And I don't have to wait for other people. So people say to me, people think, so I'm not on time, or I'm allergic to morning. There's a member of my family who is chronically late, and they always say that on her matseva, on her tombstone, they're going to write, here lies the late. So if you'll say, this is my character, this is the way I am, I'm here to tell you, in this august synagogue, which we all revere so much, I'm here to tell you that we Jews believe that we don't have to wait for Rosh Hashanah We don't have to wait for an elul. What Judaism is all about is rectifying and repairing. And developing on rights, these are strong words. If you don't become a better person, a more considerate person, if you're not more considerate at the age of 52 than you were at the age of 31, then you have failed. Failed at life. That's it. It can't get worse. But as we all know, you can flunk a course and not fail the you can flunk a test and not fail the course. A plane which flies from New York to Los Angeles, 85% of the route, it's constantly dynamically, perpetually being vectored back on the course. But the bottom line is it lands in the right runway, in the right city, in the right airport. It's 100% success. We all know this. Blowing down is not a mistake. Staying down is a mistake. The gym where I work out in Yerushalayim, it's staffed by Russians that are Hebrew challenged. And so I was trying to go from the squash courts to the pool without getting changed and dressed and going outside. One of them caught me. And he said to me, "Atakta ut," which translates, "You are a mistake." I'm still thinking about this. The mistake is to stay down. We have to know how to repair. So let me give you three, four examples, which I think will highlight this point. And then the first example I heard from Rabbi Yisachar Friend. When we were children, again, I'm 27, but when we were kids, everybody spoke Lashon Hara. Everybody gossiped and smirched and slandered. And now there's a much greater awareness. I mean, you might say this may be Lashon Hara, but you don't come out and say it. There's a greater awareness. The world has changed. I distinctly remember in Yeshiva, second Seder, in the afternoon, there was a petrochemical layer, yay thick, malodorous, odorific, farstunken, redolent. Now, if you smoke, you're a pariah out in the cold or in the heat. You don't smoke in public places anymore. You watch a movie from the 70s on your neighbor's TV. Everybody's smoking. The world has changed. If the world has changed, then we can change. Next example. I live in Israel. I travel to America very often. And my host in Brooklyn is a fellow by the name of Pashkez. Very sweet man, Mr. Pashkez. He manufactures candy. And his core clientele are Hasidim. If you look at the wrap of a Pashkez candy bar, there are more hechsher, more rabbinical certifications than there are ingredients. With no connection, no shaykhus. No sharpness, no kim leg with the rabbin, no kim gugur, no irv mefulish. And Mr. Pashkez once told me, he's a Jew a couple years older than I am, that when he was a kid, if you didn't see a picture of a pig on a candy bar, you ate it. I remember those days. He didn't go, oink, oink. Nowadays, if you don't, you don't put something in your mouth without checking the ingredients. You look for a hechsher, you look for rabbinical certification. The world has changed. If the world has changed, then we can change. One last example. I'm into examples, but we're not into them. We don't have time. One last example is Oscar Schindler was a dishonest businessman, a womanizer. He saved nearly 1,200 Jews during the Holocaust. Had it not been for the latter, if he'd be remembered, and that's a major if, he'd be remembered as a creep. And now the name Schindler is synonymous with heroism, bravery, self-sacrifice, consideration, synonymous. Like Vaseline means petroleum jelly, and Q-tips means cotton swabs, and Kleenex means tissues. Schindler means self-sacrifice. He changed his name. And we can too. Remember my three rules? Just plug it in. We can change. We're not condemned. We can all be more considerate individuals. Okay. So we're going to skip a little more. Not that you would know. You said 10-2. I'm sorry. My watch is still on Israel time. That doesn't change the minutes, but skip that. Okay. Gemara says in Brachos, Nun Ches. What's a good guest? What's a bad guest? A good guest says, look how much they've done for me. How much they cared for me. How much they went out of their way for me. And a bad guest says, and here I'm translating verbatim, they only gave me one piece of meat. They only gave me one slice of bread. They only gave me one cup of wine. They didn't do it for me. Only wanted to impress their wife and children. We don't want to go through life as bad guests. And how do we get this perspective? So my friend Rabbi Joseph Telushkin, in his book, Code of Jewish Ethics, if I misquote the title, it was not deliberate. He wrote a fine work. And he writes there, you go to a simcha, be it a l'chaim, a shabbat brachot, and what happened? Now, these people worked hard. You should have a good time. They worked for hours, maybe days. You should have a good time. What happens as you're driving home? The postmortem. Salads, atrocious. Home decorating, appalling. Kids very misbehaved. Shalom Bais. So my suggestion is, after people worked hard for you, if you don't have something good to say, then... No, we tried that already. My suggestion is, you don't have something good to say, wait 24 hours. You can't say that either. But wait 24, it'll cool off. But don't be an ingrate from the rooftops. Otherwise, you're back, yes. Okay, with so little time left, it really went fast. Right? Okay, skipping that one also. What was one example? It's not my place to say this. I think that's a speaker device to get people's attention. But through nuance that are overt to covert, we have a tendency. Now, if this doesn't apply to you, that's wonderful. It applies to me, and I'm not proud of this, and I'm working very hard working on myself. But I think it's human nature that we have a tendency to be very cordial and friendly and warm to those people that are influential and affluent and powerful. And we're much cooler towards those that are on a lower social strata. For example, someone is a partner in a law firm with 500 lawyers. Boy. That's very impressive. And someone else pumps gas in a gas station. That's not impressive. And then you learn, And then you learn that the fancy, lancy, schmancy lawyer is an abusive husband and a distant father in the image tanks. And a fellow who pumps gas in the filling station is a lovely person. His children adore him. Your image goes up. But chaval, that's our superficial impression. So let me tell you a story which is a true story. What do I mean by true story? It's not an email that went around. It really happened. This happened to my friend Yossel Chapnick, who lives in Borough Park. And Yossel had his apartment painted by a black painter one morning, and they're taking all the paintings off the wall. That would have been rather ironic, moronic, to leave them on the wall. And one of the enlargements was a blow-up at the Bava of a Rebbe. And the black painter said to Yossel, "Is this your rabbi?" He said, "No." So he said, "Why isn't he your rabbi?" "He's not my rabbi. Let's get on the job." "But why isn't he?" "He's not my rabbi. Can we get on the job?" "Why isn't he your rabbi?" "He's not my rabbi. Look, there's a whole bunch of beard painted. They look very rabbinic. Can we get on with the job?" "But why isn't he your rabbi?" "He's not my rabbi. Can we?" And then the black painter said, "He's my rabbi." "What the?" And he pulls out his wallet and rips out a photograph of the Bava Rebbe. He said, "What the?" He said, "I'll tell you." He said, "One morning I was painting his apartment, painting his house. The Rebbe came home and he said to me, 'Did you have breakfast?' I said, 'No.' He said, 'Sit down.' He waited upon me and then he said to me, 'I want to tell you something.' And I knew just what he was going to say. I heard the schmooze a million times. He's going to tell me I'm paying you good money. I want a perfect job." And the Rebbe said, "We once had the world of perfection, and everything was the way it was supposed to be. But because of our sins, the temple was destroyed. And ever since, we've never had that world of perfection. So I cannot ask you to do a perfect job, but I'd like you to try your hardest." And you know how these people recommend to get me? Hundreds of this chassidim. No one ever offered me breakfast, but they all say to me, "I'm paying you good money. I want a perfect job." And I say to them, "You want a perfect job? There's no temple. How do you want a perfect job?" Okay, time has left. I need 1 minute to make a promotion. Rabbi Shaul Salanter, the granddad of the Musar movement, said, "You can speak Musar for 47 minutes, and it's all worthwhile, even if just one person listens, even if that one person is the speaker." There are two famous orators, a Greek and a Roman, Demosthenes and Cicero. When Demosthenes finished, they said, "Great speech." When Cicero finished, they said, "Let's march." So ladies and gentlemen, we want to be considerate, we want to teach these rules, we want to be these rules, let's march. If I may, I'm off script already. It looks odd for me. We worked only 14 years. I've written a lot of books, but this one, show and tell, this one just came out. So much out. The glue is still wet. I don't think it's yet available in America, but I did stop a couple here. If you'd like them, I think you'll find them enriching. I know I will. Thank you. Thanks, Dan.